Thanks for listening to the Drummer's Weekly Groovecast. You can contact the show at twitter.com/DW Groovecast and through Facebook at facebook.com/Drummer's Weekly Groovecast.
Good evening.
I am warning you right now, if you touch my drums, I will stab you in the neck with a knife.
Ain't it fucking.
Mom!
Take it easy. Lower it.
I'm not going to lower it. I have to do this now.
I don't mind
playing
it, but lower it.
We got straight now?
No, we had a problem. I mean, we tried to do everything we could.
What do you mean?
Well, you know what I mean.
Nice! Little trouble there. You're rushing.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Yeah!
Hey folks, Phil here. Happy Monday to you, and I know what you're thinking. Well, first you're probably asking yourself, how do you know what I'm thinking? Well, I ask for the power of clairvoyance, and I found it in my stocking over the holidays. So there, you're welcome. But I do know what you're thinking. You're thinking, what do you do during that dead week between Christmas and New Year's? Well, I spend about 12 hours lashing together clips from the best of 2016. Now, the next question you're asking is, do you actually have a best of 2016? Well, I can answer that question by using a brief statement from the great character Vincent Vega from the 1994 classic Pulp Fiction. I have my moments. Or, actually, let's say we have our moments, that being John and myself. And that's not the royal we, the editorial man, that's the collective we. So that's what we're going to do this week. We're going to do a series of clips from 2016. And let me go ahead and say this, it's not even a full 2016. It's just half of 2016 because we didn't get started until July. So we are coming up on a half a year, this being episode 24. Didn't quite make it a half a year, to be technical, but we're really close. So we'll call it a half year best of half of 2016. How's that? So we're going to take little clips of different shows. Some things will be in there that you expect. Some things won't be. We're going to borrow a little bit from some of our guests and then some of our topic-based shows. However, to even have a best of 2016, I need to throw out some thanks. And first and foremost, I want to thank all the listeners out there. We mention it on various shows that we now have listeners on every continent. I mean, the thought of even having a few listeners is great, but to have the amount of listeners that we have over this very short amount of time is quite gratifying. So, again, thanks to everyone who takes the time to listen every week, who subscribe to the show. Again, we have listeners on every continent except for Antarctica, and we're coming for you guys. We know there's some penguins out there who certainly play, and so we want to get you guys on board. And I want to go ahead and also isolate a few of what we call you power listeners. And what we mean by that, you super fans, is that there are folks that we see that download the show every single week, listen to every single show. You guys are active in the, we'll call it the Drummer's Weekly Groovecast community and social media. You guys reach out to us through Facebook messages and emails, and you guys are the best. So major, major thanks to the power listeners out there. We love doing the show and bringing it to you, and we just really appreciate the engagement that you guys have with us. The next thanks, want to just say a huge, huge thank you to the three guests that we had this year. Now, there will be some more in 2017, but these three guys, who I'll go ahead and say, Scott Meter, Ryan Brown, and Little John Roberts, you guys were the first guests on this show. And you were a little bit of the guinea pig because when I reached out to you guys. We told you that it was going to be a kind of a non-traditional interview. We didn't want to spend a whole lot of time on bio. We were going to ask you some tough questions, going to ask you some things that other interviewers normally don't ask. We appreciate you being open to that and being as forthright and as honest as you were. We really do appreciate that. And it's really no secret to any of our listeners or any of our interviewees that the interviews have been the most listened to shows on the podcast. So thank you guys very, very much. And then last but not least, I want to give a huge thanks to John Chalden, my co-host. He couldn't be here today. He is on an island in the Mediterranean. He's resting up. Those men in clean white coats are taking care of him right now. He's going to be back in the next week or so. But John Chalden, love you. Couldn't do the show without you. Appreciate you to no end. So before we get to the best of 2016, just want to remind you guys that you can always reach out to us. Our email address is drummersweeklygroovecast@gmail.com. Our Facebook account is facebook.com/drummersweeklygroovecast. And you can either follow us or tweet us on our Twitter account. We are at DW Groovecast. Not the full name, just DW Groovecast if you want to reach out to us on Twitter. All right. Thanks again, guys. We really appreciate it. So onward we go into the best of 2016.
Cover, which is sort of the rationalizations for not being prepared. And we had a conversation not long ago that was fascinating to me, and I'm going to kind of put you on the spot about when you were younger and your mindset about preparing for a gig, and if you wouldn't mind sharing some of that.
Sure. Is this therapy? Is this
the No, this is just... I like seeing you squirm. That's all it is.
Well,
we should go video because it's fascinating. I mean, he starts twitching and, like, you know, grinding his teeth. But anyway, just putting you on the spot because I'm a jerk like that.
Well, you know, John, this is the podcast that's fueled on coffee and crippling self-doubt, right? You know?
Yeah, and so, why you're here, I don't know, because I could just pretty much cover that subject endlessly.
Well, the conversation that you and I had not long ago had to deal with, I was a terrible preparer years ago. And it caused a lot of damage with me from the standpoint of, like, I wasn't enjoying playing. Mm-hmm. I wasn't enjoying what I was doing.
Just stressful?
Yeah, I put a lot of stress on myself by not... There's a weird kind of a vicious cycle. I put a lot of stress on myself because I was thinking that preparing was too stressful, or that it was too much to ask. Isn't that a weird thing?
You know? Yeah, but...
And I thought for a while, how did I arrive at that? What kind of weird pretzel logic is that? You know what I mean? How did I get here? And you know, what happened was basically this. When I was a kid and ended up going to school, I was the proverbial nobody in school, and rather quickly I worked my way up the ranks of being the big fish in a small pond. Mm-hmm. And man, I was on scholarships and I was in all the top bands, all the top small groups. I was working like crazy. And, you know, with that, you get a reputation of, like, this is the hot student. This is the guy in town you got to call. And when I finished with my undergraduate degree, quite honestly, man, every graduate school I applied to, I got accepted in. Mm-hmm. And, man, I wasn't going to
I was shopping for the best deal, man, going to graduate school. You know what I mean? I not only did I want to be the graduate assistant, but I wanted to get the best deal money-wise. You know what I mean? So, I mean, that feeds into this kind of hubris. When I was studying back then, I was, you know, a jazz performance major. 95% of everything I was playing was straight ahead jazz. And I was successful at it. You know, that's all I did for years, man, was play that stuff. And so when you combine the fact of being this hot shot sort of student and everybody telling you that you're great, and then you're playing a music that is, it's improvised, then the mindset becomes, I'm going to wing it, man. I've got enough chops, man. I have enough chops that I can go in and play anything.
I'm an improviser.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I'm an improviser, man. Right. I can go in and do this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with that kind of mentality, you get into that weird thing of like, well, this job only pays this much, so I'm not getting paid to prepare, man. You know, I'm not getting paid to prepare this stuff, so I'm gonna roll into this gig, and they're going to get what they get. And that's where that's where my mindset was until I came to this realization that, man, I was driving to gigs having, for lack of a better term, panic attacks. And I used to think, oh man, it's just, you know, it's these things of like, you know, I just want to be on time, you know. Well, that was part of it, you know, part of the anxiety of that. But the real anxiety, man, was going on these gigs being unprepared. Blissfully unprepared, actually, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was causing a lot of issues. And then I guess maturity comes along.
Oh, apparently.
Yeah. You know? And maturity came along, and I started finding value in being prepared.
Man, it is so valuable.
Yeah.
It's interesting you touched on that teacher's dilemma of having a student, you know, interested in one thing and not in another. And I certainly was that student, though not having much experience with a teacher of that ilk and in the level of like college education. I knew early on, I had no earthly desire to learn mallets or timpani or to be rudimentally sound where I could be in a core.
Right.
None of that appealed to me whatsoever. I knew it in seventh grade. And although I had to have a little of that together through high school, concert band, marching band, you know, it was like either A, we weren't playing at any level that was just beyond my natural abilities. You know, I could read well enough to get through some things and all that. But it was, it just wasn't something that I wanted to invest time in. And that is something that you could not be more right about, in that, you know, making an investment in higher education when you have no desire, although it's expected of you, and you must partake in that, those techniques and styles and different instruments, you know, you gotta know, man. That's like, in this day and age now, the cost of school being what it is, you gotta walk away from that, because you're not doing anyone a favor, most importantly yourself in the future, if you end up with debt in, you know, learning a bunch of things you're not going to apply to anything in your career you want to focus on. So
yeah, and you know, one thing I want to go ahead and just hammer home the point here is that we are saying in this podcast in particular that not going to school
But having an idea and a drive of what you want to do is as valid, absolutely as valid, as going to college. We're not going to diminish this at all, because you and I both know a whole ton of drummers, great drummers, very influential drummers, never spent a second in any kind of a, you know, college or institution of higher learning. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's very, very important that everybody realizes that this is an extremely valid choice, and that if you know what you want to do, and you know, and you feel like that you've got the drive and the, you know, the instinct to go forward with not going to school, then by all means you should do it. And like I said, I've encouraged it many times to different students.
Just recognize it in that individual.
Yeah. Yep.
That's huge, man.
Threatening right now, I'm just going to let you know that we're going to start doing those wonderful videos where we're going to show you like how to play the Rosanna groove. You know, we're going to show you how to play Don't Stop Believing, because there's not enough of those videos out there.
Yeah, it won't be of me, it'll be of Jeff Vaccaro, because that's already out there.
Have you ever wondered about that?
Anyone who yeah. kind of like doubled over and almost got sick thinking about me trying to replicate,
John. This is my favorite. This is my favorite opening line on a video. Okay, you got this drummer Jay is like sitting in front of the camera, and he's going to show you how to play the Rosanna groove. The first line is this: people always ask me how you play the Rosanna groove. No, they don't ask you. They asked Jeff Porcaro when he was alive, and his videos are out there that show you how to play that groove. You know?
Oh, authority of all that is groove, yeah. Please show me. Yeah. Enlighten me.
We need another drum cover of how to play Give Blood by Simon Phillips.
Talk about ego of that magnitude, especially in a musical setting. It's the question that I often am kind of wrestle with is, does that ego truly serve the ultimate goal of creating music with others? And I can't for the life of me be convinced that yes, it does. It just there's no way, you know, at a certain level and with players of like ability, you know, that you can't tell me that having that as part of the equation where it's just dictating is really going to serve the music.
I completely agree. And I can speak from personal experience, from the simple standpoint that I know, especially earlier in my career and in my life, that I operated from a much more egocentric standpoint. And I'll address a couple of issues of why I think, or a couple of the main issues why I think ego is prominent in certain drummers. But for myself, the ego aspect of my playing was a weird sort of a combination of masking insecurity and also trying to sort of arrange my future. In other words, and by arranging the future is arranging the way I thought a gig should go.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Trying to make my future, so to speak, to make myself comfortable, ultimately, was right. What it was.
Yeah, you know? That makes perfect sense. Yeah. It's such a, you know, you always are trying to create the environment that's comfortable for you, you know, and here we're talking about what's interesting about that is, you know, there's going to be four or five other people on stage with maybe the same agenda. So that automatically is creating a weird space. And you know, but there's also the part of it that you can't, I don't think you can expect to win over people with that. And like if you were the alpha dog in a pack, you know, because we're still talking about creativity and we're talking about, you know, ultimately a lot of musicians are sensitive. A lot of musicians are, you know, they want to be free in their thoughts and their ideas, and, you know, to stifle that, it's just something that in the big picture is such a detriment and such a like just like a wet blanket, you know, on most settings like that. And you know, I guess I'm bringing this up to say, hey man, think about, are you being perceived that way, or are you guilty of creating that?
Do get a call as a sub or a one-off gig, you're not going to know anything about it, about the gig. So you have to ask for details up front. And I mean, be explicit details, you know, regarding every aspect of, first off, is it in town? What are the hours? What are the pay? You know, what are the expectations as far as learning songs, that sort of stuff? Of course, that's, you got to know that. But the other thing is when it comes to the negotiation aspect of it, some of the same technique as far as like, if they give you a number, a price, that, hey, I'm interested in the gig, but you know, the money's a little low on that. You can then, again, try to appeal to this person's rational side. Again, don't just attack him and go, I can't believe you offered me $125, you know, for this gig. That's insulting. I normally do these gigs for three times that amount, you know, that sort of thing. Again, appeal to the rational side of him. And again, give him the qualifications from the standpoint of like, hey, you know, you called me as a sub for this, so you obviously know that I'm going to prepare for your gig. That's a good topic for a podcast.
Yeah.
And you know that I'm going to come prepared to your gig. I'm going to be on time. I'm going to have all my gear. I'm going to have all my stuff together. So here's some value for you, you know? And you can kind of work your way into the negotiation aspect like that. And then, again, don't forget that you've also got non-cash or non-money type of perks that, of course, that can be added into it. And with that in mind, let me go ahead and say this. For example, if this gig you're talking about is a travel gig, if it's on the road, this is where you can do some serious wheeling and dealing as far as like non-cash style perks. And I'll just read you a list of the ones that I like. John, I'm an old man. I like private hotel rooms.
I'm oversharing. I don't overshare. I'm oversharing.
So yes, negotiating a private room can be sometimes it can be pretty easy, because one of the things you have to keep in mind is that a lot of times the hotels that you're staying in are being provided by the client, and it's not necessarily from the person that books you. So a lot of times he can just request that extra room, and that's no skin off his back, but it's a big perk to you,
right,
to have that private room. So that's the first one I like to throw out there.
Love that.
Yeah. The next one is, again, being an old man, I like to travel nice. That's a big part. And so if you can get any sort of like travel class upgrade, again, sometimes travel is provided by the client. And so if you can get some kind of travel perk as a class upgrade, if you're flying, again, it really makes the gig easier when you do that.
you can always negotiate your per diem. A lot of gigs, when you're out on the road, will give you a per diem. And of course, we know that we can use that for food or just sundries, shall we say. And sometimes there's some wiggle room on those per diems. An extra $10, $15 a day can, if you're out for a while, can add up.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the other thing, too, is depending on where you are, that you've got to be careful with that, you know. Eating in Wichita versus eating in New York.
Slightly different.
So,
yeah.
And, you know, from my experience with per diem, sometimes there'd be a bump for, like, if we were in New York City or San Francisco or, you know, a more expensive place, we might get some extra. So that's not, you know, people realize that's a reality, you know, and you often are taken care of like that. So that's cool.
You know, and if you're a crafty fellow, much like myself and yourself, if you do get a little bump in a per diem, but if you find out that your gig has catering, though, still, you can pocket that little bit of extra per diem and just eat off the catering buffet, which is always nice.
Yeah. I've saved quite a bit of money in that in that way before.
Yeah. Another great little non-monetary perk is, depending on the level of gig that you're doing, it's always possible to try to negotiate in some help for loading in and setting up, having a tech.
Woo!
Yeah, boy, that's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that sheer excitement and tone in your voice is that it rarely happens. So, it's a good one.
Hey, let me tell you, I will take it if they will just get my gear to the stage, and I'll set up. I'll take it from there, boys. Just get my stuff in and get it where it needs to be. You know, that's a nice little perk.
Yeah, I used to kind of dread backline gigs, like, oh, it's not my stuff, you know, I gotta tweak this and that, and I gotta tune and blah blah blah. And I realized long ago, you know, when I'm done with this gig, I'm walking off this stage, and I love that drum set, even if it was a piece of junk. It's like, that's awesome, I love it, man. That's a good feeling. And oftentimes, you know, it's a pretty brutal travel schedule to get to, you know, your one-off backline gigs. And it's just like, I've learned to, or like local, you know, multi-band gigs where the headline guy's, yeah, you can use my kit. I'm like, yeah, cool. Especially if there's Smith's Old Bar with stairs.
Yeah.
Like, man, that sounds great, bro. Yeah.
John, do you know what you've morphed into when you walk right off stage? A singer. I'm going to go with a little trick that I kind of dumbed upon. I mean, just literally dumbed upon. And I think this is going to put the light bulb off on many a drummer's head that has to carry their cymbals from time to time. And what it is back when I first started doing some touring where I had to do some fly-out dates where drums were provided, but yet I wanted to carry my cymbals, which were all of the fly-out jazz dates that I did. I had a flight case made for me, and it was just a traditional cymbal flight case with, you know, the recessed handles and recessed latches and ball corners, you know, the whole thing. And it weighs about 1,000,000 pounds, right? It's got the industrial foam on the inside.
Close, at least.
Right. Well, the manufacturer of this case put the traditional cymbal spindle in the middle of the case, where you just take the cymbals as they are and you put them into the case on top of the, or through the spindle. The spindle goes through the cymbal hole, and then you just use a nice big piece of huge felt with a, you know, a nut on top that keeps them secured.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's well and good. And that's the traditional way of doing things. But as you all know,
certainly not out of line by way of what was considered norm.
Right.
Right.
Well, in a moment of clarity, John, I removed, there was just a large bolt, right, which was the spindle.
Right.
And it was just traditionally bolted down underneath the foam, which you could remove, mm-hmm. right? So what I did was I removed that center spindle. And then what I did was I went and got a very short bolt with a very, with a large enough nut that would cover the threads, right? In other words, where the bolt wouldn't stick up into the, and create, you know, create a spike, so to speak.
Right.
Right. The bolt was big enough to where it would cover all the threads. So what I did was I just took that small bolt, put it up through where the spindle was, put the nut on top of it, then put the foam over top of it. So now you've got just kind of a blank case, right?
Right.
And so what I did then was I took my regular cymbal bag, put my cymbals in there, and then put the cymbal bag inside of the case, which would fit. So what that you're asking yourself, well, why did that psychopath do that? Was it just he needed more protection? Well, it does add a little extra layer of protection. But more importantly, now when I get to whatever city I'm in, I don't have to schlep a 65-pound flight case with me. I just leave my flight case in the hotel room, pull the cymbal bag out, and now I'm mobile with a cymbal bag with my cymbals in it. Voila, thank you.
Awesome stuff. The only drawback to that is when you arrive at the venue, if you just have a cymbal bag, the crew may, you know, view you as less important. If you bring in that case, they're like, oh, we got a big leaguer. So you kind of you're secure in your status if you're doing that. I'm impressed.
Well, yeah, flight.
Whatever. That wasn't even funny. Let's move on.
Flight cases do give you a modicum of street cred. Don't
I said
they?
Move on. Well, you're not following. Listen, I have enough people in my life right now. I'm not following directions. I don't need you to be adding to the. Okay.
Yes, Father.
There you go. You can finish if you want. I just wanted to see if it worked with someone.
No, well, I'm and the first thing is, we have to be, as drummers, we have to maintain a level of drumming technique that is higher and more sophisticated than you need for the gig that you're playing, okay? And basically what I'm going to call that you need to have some headroom in your technique. Because here's the thing, if you're having a bad night, you've got to fall back first and foremost on your just pure drumming and technical abilities to get you through that gig. And if you are barely hanging on technique-wise, in other words, if you are just barely making it happen on a good night, then you're probably sunk when it comes to when you have to deal with some adversity,
mm-hmm.
you know? So you've got to make sure that in your practice and in your preparation to do your gig, that you've got to be well above the level of technique and musicianship to do that gig, so that when you're at your worst, you can fall back on that, and then you're going to be able to play consistently better.
Yeah. I think that the technique thing, I know, speaking from my point of view, you know, I don't have a lot of technique, but
you got more than you think you do. Trust me.
Very true. Very true. But I want to make sure I speak to some people that aren't maybe as hung up on that. The idea is as much recognizing what even in the worst of conditions, what you are capable of doing and making good musical choices. And so headroom and especially technique headroom, I see it a little broader than just the specific idea of technique.
Mm-hmm.
But you could get into the get into more of the your instincts and experience,
right?
Of the multitude of gigs you've done and all that, and knowing what you can do comfortably to alleviate any problems, if that's simplifying something, if it's just trying to adapt to a player's approach that mm-hmm. you might not be used to. That's in my sense, in my opinion, that's technique as well.
Absolutely is.
And that's a little nebulous, but mm-hmm. but I want to make sure we're not just like, man, if you don't have your chops at a certain point, you're going to just fall apart on this gig. That's not necessarily
right.
all that you're speaking to, if I can speak.
Yeah, but that's exactly right.
One of the high profile gigs you did was 38 Special,
mm-hmm.
and I know some of that came out of your really developing a reputation as a studio guy in town. People are enamored with what you're bringing, and you're getting hired a lot and all that. And it kind of came out of that, if I'm not right. Your reputation was growing, and why don't you kind of give us an idea of how that came about and your experience with
sure.
that.
Through the 80s, I was playing with Drum Mulls and Tom Gross. I don't know if you guys remember those guys around town. We've
heard of Tom Gross.
Yeah. So I had a lot of electronic stuff going on back in the day.
Embrace technology.
Yeah, I embraced
early
it.
On.
I had the Simmons brains. I had two Simmons brains and a Lindrum. Going for loops and,
sequencing stuff.
All kinds of stuff and a whole PA of stuff that blasted it all through some cabinets behind me. So I was way into it.
Yeah.
So the 38 thing, how that morphed was Rodney Mills, producer here in Atlanta, done Skinner, Atlanta Rhythm Section, you name it,
mm-hmm.
had just cut a Doobie Brothers record in 1990, using all electronic stuff. I don't know what it was. I don't know what they did, but all electronic drum kit.
What record was it?
I'm not sure. They cut it out in L.A.
Okay.
Not sure which record it was. So he wanted to do that on the next 38 record.
These are samples and...
It's samples, yeah, like Akai samplers and using a Mac, wow. that whole thing.
Wow.
Playing drum pads into a Mac and then just like,
no
okay,
kit whatsoever.
None.
Wow. Okay.
They were overed up in real cymbals and hat.
Yeah,
pretty much. So they wanted to do that on this 38 record. So they attempted to try it, and their drummer at the time was kind of in transition. He was going into ministry, and he was thinking about quitting anyway, so his heart really wasn't in it.
Mm-hmm.
So during the start of the record, he left and said, well, who's around town that we could probably try this electronic thing? So my name came up with all the background of the electronic stuff. So they brought me in for a couple songs just to see how they went. And I had the MPC at the end, the Akai MPC 60 at the time, and
yep.
a couple samplers and that kind of things, and a drum cat. That's it. So I had all my sounds sort of sampled into this thing, and it sounded like me. You can play other sounds, but if they're not your sounds, it's they don't sound the same as your sounds sort of because they play differently. So
totally.
It was kind of me anyway. So we did that and overed up some live cymbals, and it went great and ended up doing the whole record. And after that, 6 months go by. I'm back in the studio doing dates here and there, and they said, hey, we're going to tour this thing. We got a top 40 hit. Want to go out? And this is before kids. So I really talked to my wife, said, you know, I'd love to, you know, go out and try, do, I've never toured before. I'd love to try it and see what it's like out there. And it wasn't really a bad tour situation. It wasn't three months at a time you're gone. It was 3 weeks.
Oh, nice.
Which is pretty easy schedule because these guys are all married and have kids and everything. So it was a great experience. It was 2 years. I mean, I'm not a road guy. I played a lot of golf.
Yeah.
It was fun. I retched my back. We had played so much golf.
Yeah.
So was it like bus tour for the most part?
Bus tour. You know, we'd fly out to a lake. Like we'd fly out to the West Coast and then catch a bus for that whole side of the country and then fly back.
And then like what kind of venues?
Outdoor fairs, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Festivals,
that kind of thing.
You know, playing with Journey, like warming up for Journey or something like that, or in a stadium, or, you know, kind of all over the map a little bit. Some indoor theaters here and there, but mostly outdoor.
And then what, like, do you have a crew, tech, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, Scott Hoffman was my drum tech.
Who was
it?
Scott Hoffman.
From Philadelphia?
Incredible, no. Do you know who this guy is?
Scott Hoffman, there's a Scott Hoffman
Florida.
That's a big, he's a collector.
Scott Hoffman's an incredible drummer, too. I mean, he is so good. And he had a little side band with some of the guys in 38. They'd have their own little band. But it's a little quick story about Scott. Scott was going on after he left 38. He went on to road managing for, you know, Boys to Men, the other boy band. 98 Degrees or, you know, Backstreet Boys. It was Backstreet Boys. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Florida, that makes sense.
So Scott's doing the James Taylor gig like in the last few years. Steve Gadd.
Who?
2 years for Steve Gadd.
Who?
Yeah, he's just a guy. He's kind of a local legend in Rochester. You might not know him.
Steve gets appendicitis attack.
I've heard this story.
This is the guy?
This is the guy. Yeah.
This is the guy who was my drum tech. And they're like freaking out, calling everybody they know in L.A. Can we get so-and-so out here, fly out, blah, blah, blah. And they have got a show that night, and everybody they've contacted can't get there till the next day. And they ask my buddy Scotty, man, can you do the show?
I know it inside and out.
I've been watching Steve for 2 years, you know?
Yeah.
He nails it.
Of course. Oh, it's awesome.
James is coming up to him between every song. Man, you're killing it. You're doing awesome. And whoever they had coming the next day, they canceled. See, Scott's doing the gig till Steve comes back. So
how long did he play?
I think 3 or 4 shows, something like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's a great story, man.
It makes so much sense.
If it's
a capable player.
Like yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the nightmare of no matter who it is, any ringer is going to come in and be like,
you never know.
How's that ending go?
Just because some guy's teching for you, you never know.
Yeah.
Really, their story and how, you know, they could be ready to jump in at any second, man. There's some great talent out there.
There sure is.
You mentioned the guys coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Man, you know, what are they looking for? What's some advice you can give them? I would say find your niche, you know, whatever that is, you know. For me, it was just, you know, the way I put a backbeat in there. I don't know, but and working with people, my ability to work with people, I think it was a niche I had, you know, in production ideas and arrangement ideas maybe. But I don't know, there's so many great players here now. And I also, as far as recording, I think Pro Tools has gotten us lazy a little bit. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, playing with a click helped me so much in the studio. Because we, with Tom Gross and Navarro, we play with click and loops pretty much 90% of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that helped me in the studio just make that transition. But I think now we've become, I find myself guilty of it. Oh, Pro Tools will fix
it
later.
Good. Mm. Yeah.
It's close enough. They just want the part, right? Man, that's just, I don't know, you're not honing your craft. Man, just these kids, I think the younger guys just hone their craft now. Don't just be satisfied with, you know, being one-dimensional musically as well. Listen to all kinds of different stuff. I mean, there's some great drummers in these churches, but don't let the and believe me, I've grown spiritually and relationship. It's been a great experience playing North Point. But don't let that be your only musical dimension.
Mm. Yeah, it's a bubble that is going to stunt
right.
your growth in a lot of ways
right.
if you don't. Yeah, that's,
I mean, there's so much positive about it.
Of course.
But just musically, if you're doing this full time and want to do it in all aspects, man, just get more well-rounded.
But really what we're saying is, you know, if you're going to extol the virtues of anything, make sure that there are actually some virtues there.
Yeah, I like that, man. There's this hype and, you know, self-promotion thing has really gotten out of control. We obviously know why, because it's
free.
Free. It's there and it's, you know, I mean, a lot of people are pretty self-absorbed and self-serving and they just can't help themselves. But I really believe that most people see through a lot of that. It's kind of like when someone's just not genuine, I think most people really sense it, you know, and I just don't think it's in your best interest to not only overdo it, which we've seen happen a lot, where someone's just constantly touting themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a lot of people that do that don't have a lot to back it up, which is weird to me.
Yeah.
And then you'll like someone like Scott Meter, for example. I mean, I've never even seen him hardly post that he's even doing a gig, you know,
right.
Like, or what he played on, you know, like rarely, you know, it's like all of his is word of mouth and reputation. And it's just something that we have to really self-monitor ourselves, I think. And it's something that everybody needs to be more aware of, especially in this game, because there's a million people doing it. You're just becoming part of the noise if you're, you know, not putting something out of substance, like you said. If there's a great video of you playing in a great situation, mm-hmm. man, put it up.
Yeah.
Let people see your thing, you know. But this constant every day, went to Guitar Center and bought a cable just so you're visible on social media. Stop.
No substance.
Stop, you know.
Yeah. And you know, kind of what goes along with what you're saying is you absolutely want to be tasteful with not only the amount of posts that you're making, but with the content as well. I mean, you know, there's something to be said about, like you mentioned, you know, posting a great video of you playing in a situation where it sounds good, looks good. Sure, it's great to let people hear that. You're proud of it, and there's some substance there. But, you know, not necessarily hiring a professional photographer to come in and take these photos of you standing on a ladder dropping drumsticks down on a camera lens. That I've read about you is you have quite a studio resume as well. You've done some studio stuff.
Well, thanks. So when I moved to LA, my whole thing was I want to be studio guy. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be road guy. I want to be in LA. I want to do studio stuff. Mm-hmm. And that was one of my big reasons for wanting to study with Kenny, because he was doing, you know, tons and tons of session work. And he helped me with that immensely, trying to get in the mindset of doing the session thing and how to do it, how to hear a song one time and then play it back immediately after you've only listened to it one time. And this is a great thing for everybody to practice at home. Pick any song, listen to it, figure out a way to make some quick chart of it, and then do like a fake session with yourself. Uh-huh. And then give, you know, or have a buddy do it with you and give yourself instruction, you know, record it and be like, okay, that was cool. Maybe do a different fill going into the second chorus, and the fill going out of the bridge wasn't very good. Try that one again, but do the same fill going into the outro. Like putting yourself in mock session scenarios.
Great advice.
So I mean, that's for me, learning how to chart stuff quickly is probably one of the most valuable assets that I think any drummer or any musician can have. And I got a lot of that from Kenny. And then one thing I thought of this, I need to mention this too, when I moved there, another thing that I did is I joined the Musicians Union, and I got the union book, and I called all of my favorite drummers and asked them if they taught lessons. So when I moved there, I was only there for like a couple of weeks. I joined there and I called Bizanette, uh-huh, Weckel, Vinny, Keltner, like you name it, like Kurt Biscara, yeah, Joe Percaro, Alex Acuna, Tom Brechtlein. I mean, like, I literally went through the union book and was like, okay, I have nothing going on. This is the perfect time to try to take lessons from these guys, even if it's one lesson. And Kenny was, you know, throwing me some auditions on the side, and maybe one of these guys might have some work he can't do or something that doesn't pay enough. You know, maybe, you know, whatever, Tom Brechtlein doesn't, it gets called for a gig and he's like, I'm not going to do it. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't pay enough because he's at this amazing level. Maybe, you know, he'll throw some stuff my way. You never know what's going to happen. So of all those guys I called, you'd be surprised the number of them that actually called me back, even though I was just a kid who just moved to LA. And I will say, when Jim Keltner called me back,
oh my gosh.
It was one of the craziest moments ever. And it's also a testament to how nice almost all these guys are. That like they're all crazy busy and they're on the road right all the time. And Bizanette called me back from the road. He was like, I'm on the road right now. But do you know this drummer, Mark Craney? I did not know who Mark was. He was like, Mark's a great friend of mine. You need to go study with him. When I get back, I'd love to teach you.
Right.
So then he introduced me to Mark, and that was a whole other thing. Before I forget, I thought of that. That was a whole other eye-opening experience right when I got there. Great.
I wrote a little quick thing out here. I'm going to call it the Drummer's Weekly Groovecast Rorschach Test. And what I wanted to do, I wrote out just 20 little quick questions. This is going to be rapid fire.
Okay, all right.
Beat the clock.
Yeah.
Some of it's going to be yes or no, you know.
We're on ESPN now.
Exactly. Yeah, all right. And it's going to be kind of like, for lack of a better term, I might go Coke or Pepsi?
And then Coke.
Yeah, right. There you go. You're in Atlanta. You have to say that, right?
I didn't think about that. Okay. I have been to the museum before.
Yeah. Right. So I'm going to we're going to try to get this. These are 20 questions. Let's try to get them done in a minute.
Okay.
I'll even give you this. You can do one pass because, man, I'm already going to tell you there's one tough one on here.
Oh, no. All right.
Okay. Are you ready? We're going to start the clock.
Okay.
Wood tip or nylon tip?
Wood tip.
Metal snare or wood snare?
Wood snare.
The Police or Sting?
The Police.
Bus or plane?
Bus, no question.
Bozio or Caliuta?
Oh, God. Bozio.
Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Click track or nothing?
Nothing.
Barbecue, pork or beef?
Beef.
Underrated drummer?
Jerry Gaskill.
Marimba or Vibes?
Vibes.
PC or Mac?
Mac.
What's your favorite cymbal?
Sabian 18-inch HHX Stage Crash.
Nice. You have a name for your car?
No.
Elvin or Tony?
Oh, wow. Tony.
Here's a California question. Safeway or Ralph's?
Ralph's.
Traditional grip or match grip?
Match.
For your driving, drive like a granny or drive a getaway car?
Granny.
Hard cases or bags?
Hard cases.
Stocks or mutual funds?
Stocks.
One more California question. In-N-Out Burger or Sco's In-N-Out Chicken Burger. Waffles? Oh. All right. That, you know what? I normally send these questions to the Drummers Weekly Groovecast think tank, but I'm going to say you passed on this. Any sage advice you'd like to give our listeners out there, young musicians, working musicians?
Don't give up. Persistence. Don't let anybody tell you you can't do it or that you won't make a living at it, because I've been doing it for a long time, and the people I've seen that have not given up have, it may have taken a while, but they've eventually found a way to make a living doing what they love, and not, you know, in the case of LA, a lot of people, you know, move to LA. Not many people are from LA.
Right.
And I've seen so many people come and go and come and go. And every time they leave, I think, man, if they just would have stayed another year, because they're so great and they're a great person. And I've seen a few people move back home and they're not as happy because they're at home and they're, you know, doing something they may not want to be doing. I just say, just do it. Just don't give up and don't let anybody tell you you can't do it.
Was essentially this, and I'll paraphrase it because it was a little bit of an elongated question, but the gist of the question was, would you advocate choosing a career in music? I said no.
No.
I said
didn't
no.
Even pause.
Yeah. And again, let me say this. This is not to be this negative kind of thing. It's not to be something, you know, that's condemning choosing a career or the music business just in general, right? Mm-hmm. I came at it from a very different slant or from a very different angle. And again, like I said, I think this nice lady was really trying to get everyone on board to go, yes, you can choose, you know, music as a career and it's going to be great. It's this fulfilling and rewarding thing. And in some ways it absolutely is, but I took it from a different slant, as I said, John. And what I told her was this. I said, I feel like that if you get to a point of being, you know, being a musician and this is going to be a career, you know it. You don't have a choice. I used to have a friend that used to say, music chooses you, you don't choose it.
I would wholeheartedly agree with that.
Right. And so I explained that in the homework assignment. I said, look, if you have these other options, like in other words, if you're a kid or even if you're, you know, like a college student, young adult, and you're sitting there go, well, let's see, I'd be happy being an accountant. I'd be happy being a physicist. And I would be happy being a musician. I got to choose one of those. I would say don't choose the music side of that. Don't do it.
Or at least explore
the other side
to a great deal.
Yeah.
The other option.
And so that's what I'm talking about. rationalize that in your mind that you're working with this cat, man, that played with, I mean, you know, a lot of people would consider Tony Williams like the greatest drummer in history.
Yeah.
You know, how do you reconcile that?
Man, I have no idea. I just say I'm blessed, and whatever I'm doing something right as far as playing wise, because, you know, there's cats out here with chops galore and all like that, but it's at the end of the day, it's really how you approach the music.
Serving it.
It's how you approach the music. Like, I mean, of course you got to have chops and stuff. Sure. You got to come through and play stuff, but, you know, all of those chops and stuff don't add up to the mental process of how you're going to approach playing with this legendary cat. You know, George Benson, George Duke, Herbie Hancock, Stevie Wonder, all of them that I've worked with, I brought something to the table as far as the approach to the music.
Well, let's not lose sight of the fact that none of them were stuck with you. They wanted you.
Right, yeah.
Which helps a great deal psychologically, I'm sure.
Helps a lot, yeah. I mean, that alone is like a very humbling thought, you know, to know that, man, they hired me to come play with them. It wasn't like, I didn't ask, could I come play? You know, it was like.
Right, they didn't settle.
Yeah,
so
man.
That in itself is that's just a vote of confidence that people would dream of. So, of course, rise to the occasion, give 110%.
Absolutely. It's amazing. Don't freeze up. I mean, you know, you get there and you're like, okay, I'm here now.
Yeah.
Now what are you going to do?
Right.
Well, a lot of the times it's mental.
Absolutely.
It's mental, man. Like you guys could go there and play. You know, if you got the right mentality, you can get through that gig. I mean, if you play the right stuff, but the way that you're thinking, how you're approaching that gig means everything.
Right. Well, one of the terms that we like to kick around when we've done shows on this type of subject is that, it just like you said, anybody over a period of time can amass chops. Man, you can sit in a practice room all day long with a practice pad or a drum set, and you can amass chops. But the whole thing has to do with your musical depth and your experience that you can bring to a gig, because all the chops in the world does not get you musical depth.
No way.
You know?
No way. I mean, and there's so many different styles of stuff that you're playing with those kind of cats. I mean, George will pull out a straight ahead song in a minute, and then he'll go to some straight funk stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Then he'll play pull a fusion song out, like Bus Tours or Rush Hour, you know, which is in 5 and then changes into 9. And like, hey, man, don't forget he played with Zappa. Like, anything could happen in those type situations. So you got to be ready and prepared to play whatever. You know, it might be a bossa nova. It might be like some Brazilian, you know, or African, you know, vibe song. Or he did so many different styles of music. So you had to be versatile,
right,
in your styles.
I made just a few little quick yes or no questions that I just want to run past you real quick. I don't want you to think about them, man.
All right.
I just want you, First reaction, okay?
All right.
So we will take these results and we will send them to our think tank and have you analyzed after this.
Okay.
Okay, you ready?
Yep.
Don't think too much about this.
Okay, I'll try not to.
All right, John, start the clock. Are you ready?
Ding.
Wood tip or nylon tip?
Wood.
Stax or Motown?
Stax.
Good answer. What's your favorite TV show?
Right now, Insecure.
When you're touring, bus or plane?
Plane.
In-ears or wedges?
In-ears.
For barbecue, pork or beef?
Neither. I'm a pescatarian.
PC or Mac?
Always Mac.
Think carefully on this next one. Eagles or Falcons?
Eagles all day.
Click track or nothing?
Click track.
Elvin or Tony?
Tony.
Hard cases or bags?
Hard case. I want to save my shit. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Name an underrated drummer.
Ooh. Dang, it's so many. Kenwood Dennard.
Worst traffic, Atlanta or Philadelphia?
Atlanta.
George Clinton or Isaac Hayes?
George Clinton.
Most important question. Pats or Geno's?
Pats, baby.
Right on. John, it's been a pleasure, man. words of wisdom you'd like to give to any musicians, young or old, out there?
Basically, just stick to your guns. Have a goal in mind. You know, work towards something. Be cool. You know, it's not hard to just be cool in this industry. Maybe it is for some people, but I would suggest that people just be cool. You know, get along with others. You know, the competition is there, but there's room for everybody. You know, a lot of these cats coming up, you know, they all feel like they have to, like, have some type of, you know, animosity towards each other. I don't know why, but it gets to the point where it's just not cool anymore. Like, after you get off the drums, you still have to be a human being, you know? So, you know, you might be a great player, but a jerk in, you know, as a human being.
Yeah.
You know, you got to talk to people. You got to get along with folks. Like, all of that stuff is like a package deal for a musician to have, you know? And it's good, you know, because people like to be around folks that are cool, you know? A lot of cats get gigs off of the fact that they're just a cool individual.
Yeah, we talk about it. I'm like, can I be on a bus with this guy?
That's right. Exactly right, you know? Man.
Yeah. Nobody wants to deal with a jerk, man, especially on tour. Like, every day you have to see this person, like, oh, man. And there's times where it's always one. There's one bad apple in the group that's just like, God.
Makes that bus feel like a VW, man.
Yeah. Like, as soon as they come around, everybody cringes, like, ugh.
But, you know, speaking to drummers especially, man, we're such a fraternal bunch. My best friends are drummers. And the small percentage of you guys out there that aren't looking at it that way need to get it together. Because
most of us are cool with each other.
Yeah, man. And it's... We all benefit from that on a million levels too. Yeah. So.
And the mutual respect and everything means definitely a lot. You know, but yeah, I would tell people to just, you know, definitely work towards your goal. It's not going to be put in your lap, so you got to go for it. A lot of people ask me, man, how do I get a gig? You know, like, how do you get a gig? Go out and play these places where you might get seen. Yeah. You know, it's nobody's going to come knocking on your door to give you a gig. You know, like, do some of these shows where you might not be getting paid as much. You know, you might not get paid at all on some of this stuff, but all of those things add up. I did all of that stuff, man, especially back in Boston. I did a lot of gigging around town just so that I could be noticed and seen. I mean, there's so many musicians out here, man. It's like, how am I going to stand out from the rest? You know, and you got to have something that stands out, and you got to put yourself in the right places to be seen.
And social media hype, man, there's a million people doing that.
Yeah.
If you go out and play.
And that social media hype better add up to what you're doing.
No doubt. <Yeah. laughs> Oftentimes it doesn't.
I mean, I'm going to say most of the time.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah.
That little 15-second clip ain't enough. Like,
no.
Somebody comes see you at a full show, you better do something, you know, if you're really trying to get out there.
Good stuff, man.
So there you have it, folks. The best of 2016. Thanks so much for tuning in to the little podcast that could. It's just an idea that John and I had several months ago to sit down, get over-caffeinated with some coffee, and talk about our 30-plus years in the music business. We love doing the show, and we hope you love it too. If you would, the next time that you're in iTunes, if you could swing by our podcast page and leave us a short review, we would greatly appreciate it. It certainly doesn't have to be anything fancy. Just a few words, and if you are so inclined, 5 stars, we would greatly, greatly appreciate it. And as always, we appreciate the active community of the Drummers Weekly Groovecast Nation. Continue to reach out to us. Say hi to us. Send us your ideas and your questions. You can email us at drummersweeklygroovecast@gmail.com. You can get us on Facebook at facebook.com/Drummers Weekly Groovecast, or you may tweet us at DW Groovecast or twitter.com/DW Groovecast. All right, folks, it's been a great 2016. 2017 is going to be bigger and better. We've got some new surprises. We've got some more guests that are coming up, some new segments, all that good stuff, and much, much more. And until then, I'm going to leave you with the quote of 2016 from our very own John Chalden.
Hey, shut your pie hole and be the big fluffy cloud. Okay?
Bye.